Network.
Morbid Curiosity contains strong language and disturbing content with possible trigger warnings.
It is intended for a mature audience, 18 years and older. Listener discretion is advised.
That day started out as any other day. I went to class in the morning.
I was coming out of the bathroom on my way to my fifth period class.
We had about 10 minutes of class left.
The door just kicks open like a movie.
Everyone thought it was an animal.
I thought it was a book dropping.
And then you just heard pop, pop, pop.
Community College, Virginia Tech,
Maryville,
Kilchuck
Heights.
Welcome to Morbid Curiosity, a podcast about the darker side of life.
Northern Illinois University, Sandy Hook Elementary School, Old Coast University, Columbine High School, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School.
They're still shooting.
I just kept thinking over and over and over, I'm gonna die.
We were all in the hallway running away.
Everybody went every which way.
I just stood there and I started crying.
She shot through my door.
I got hit with those 3 pellets from the shotgun.
I said, hey, why don't you shoot this way instead? And then when I seen the guy's face,
what I saw in his eyes was terrifying.
He didn't seem stressed, he didn't seem nervous.
It was just this blank face.
We're number 3 now. On the 14th of February of this year, we became number 3.
As you can imagine, it is a challenging, difficult morning. George is on the scene in Florida where another community is in disbelief, shocked by devastating violence, this time at that Florida high school on Valentine's Day.
That is the school right behind me, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. It is a huge school, 10 buildings, more than 3,000 students. And if you ask people here in Parkland, why did you move to Parkland? They say it is for that school. One of the top schools in the state. Parkland consistently voted one of the safest communities in America until today. Here's what we know at this hour. At least 17 people have been killed, students and adults. At least 15 injured, and the shooter is in custody. This is the 18th school shooting already this year. It is just mid-February.
One of the earliest incidents in recent history took place in 1966 at the University of Texas in Austin, where a gunman positioned himself on the observation deck of the UT Tower and took aim at people below. He killed 14 and injured 31 others until police were able to locate him and shoot him to death. 2 teenagers went on a shooting spree at Columbine High School in Colorado in April 1999. They killed 13 people before taking their own lives, but they left 24 others injured and a nation devastated. In March 2005, a 16-year-old stole police weapons from his grandfather and went to Red Lake Senior High School in Minnesota, where he killed 7 people and wounded 5 others before taking his own life. The deadliest U.S. school shooting in modern history took place at the Virginia Tech campus in April 2007, when a student killed 32 people and injured 17 others. He also
active
shot
shooters.
Himself
Why?
To death.
Why do they shoot their peers, students, teachers, faculty? Why is this still happening 19 years after Columbine? We wanted to record an episode about Parkland, about school shootings, about what's going on in our country today. Instead, we recorded a conversation between Q and myself. Parts of it got heated, not towards each other, but about the topic itself. This conversation we had over the phone, we just wanted to get what was in our hearts out.
The following phone conversation was recorded with permission by 2 good friends after the latest mass school shooting in February of this year. The opinions expressed are not necessarily the opinions shared by Morbid Curiosity. As a journalist, documentarian podcast, we respect each individual's right to express their opinion and we will defend that right. Thank you for listening.
Video of a gentleman who said, I was supposed to be a mass school shooter. And he talks about how what he was going through. He was a kid from Colorado who was going to high school, who was super shy, was bullied, was super depressed, and he had gotten to the point where he was getting really fed up with everybody. He made a list of the people he wanted to harm. He went around and hid knives and shanks and a bunch of stuff in any location. He said he basically was talking about the fact that he wanted to make sure that he had a weapon readily available should he need it, and that the only reason he didn't shoot up a school was because he couldn't get access to guns.
And a man in Colorado has written a powerful confession in response to the school shooting in Florida. Quote, I was almost a school shooter, he says. I didn't carry out anything. I didn't hurt anyone. But in 1996, I almost did the worst possible thing. People say mental health is the issue, and that's true. A bigger issue was love. I had a severe lack of love, and I really think this kid did too. Some people blame this violence on the media or video games or music. We call those people morons. But there was one thing that would have made it all different. I didn't have access to an assault rifle. I was almost a school shooter. I am not a school shooter because I didn't have access to guns. Guns don't kill people. People kill people. But people with guns kill lots of people. That man is Aaron Stark, and he joins me now. Aaron, first of all, thank you very much for being here. And it's such a brave thing to put into words, to put down on paper. I condensed it a little bit so we could read it on the air. But you boil your point down to you didn't have access to guns. What do you think should be happen? What do you think should happen when it comes to guns?
I think we really need to look hard at it. First, I would like to say thank you for having me on. I'm a huge fan. I've watched you forever. I think we really need to have a hard look at the effect that guns have. Do we really need to have assault weapons? Do we really need to have people being able to go buy an AR-15 when they're not able to even buy a pistol because they won't pass the background checks? The thing about my post was it's more than just guns. It's a multifaceted issue, and if you focus on just the guns, then you'll ignore the rest. But if you focus on just the mental health, then you'll have missed the gun part also.
So what do you want to focus on? What do you think is the holistic approach?
Love. I think the love is what we should focus on. Focus on communicating with the people who we think need it the most. One of the most disturbing things I keep on hearing everybody say during all this time is we need to watch for the people who might be dangerous, and we need to look out for them. What does that actually mean? Does that mean that we're going to lock people up before they act like before they do a crime just because we think they're going to? Or does that mean we're going to reach out to them and tell them that they're worth it when they think that they're not? And do we show our kids that they already have the whole world? They already have everything that they need. They just can enjoy it. We have this culture now where everybody is attacking everybody all the time. We have a political culture where both sides are constantly attacking. It's in all aspects of our culture, from our sports to our music to we like this show and I don't like that show. Every aspect of our culture, we have this kind of contest. The only thing that's really going to stop this is love.
Let me ask you, if when you were that age and you were going through this and you felt ostracized and you felt bullied and you felt like an outsider as you say in this post, you were hiding weapons all over. If somebody in your class just walked up to you and, I don't know, gave you a hug or said, you know, hey, you're worth it, or just something nice, would that alone have changed the way you felt?
It literally did. That is literally what happened that stopped me from carrying out my plan. It was that I couldn't find a gun. That is true. That's what caused. That's the difficulties back in the day with the assault weapons ban and the fact that I was an insane teenager who was chaotic. And that's another element to remember, is that people who are crazy and going to go kill people aren't necessarily the most logical people. And when people say that, well, they could have done it another way, maybe that way just didn't exist to that person. But I'm sorry, I kind of lost track there.
You were saying that's what happened to you. Somebody walked up to you and said you are worth it.
Yes, that's exactly what happened to me. In fact, on at least two occasions, I was suicidal and or homicidal. One particular one I'll share with you, I've shared it before. I was extremely suicidal one evening, and a friend of mine, without having any idea that it was going on and what state I was in, invited me over for a party that I didn't know was existing. She had baked me a blueberry peach pie, and I got there and everybody had the pie and it was all for me, and I didn't even know it was going to be for me. And that literally saved my life that night. I wasn't going to survive that night if that hadn't happened. People reach out, and sometimes they don't even know the effect they're going to have. A kind word, a hug, saying, hey, how are you? You want to come have food with me? Do you want to come watch a movie? Could literally save someone's life. When you're in the worst state and you think that no one cares, having someone actually care can make an entire world of difference.
graduated. He was like, I graduated with my class. I didn't harm anybody. You know, I am now married. I have my own kid. He's like, but I was going to be a mass school shooter, except I just didn't have guns. I didn't have access to a gun. So we're so caught up. Like, I find it so hypocritical. Like, oh, we must pay attention to the Second Amendment and carry muskets and bayonets, because that is what the Second Amendment told us to do. But then anything else, it's to the point where the Second Amendment is the most important amendment ever made. None of the other ones ever matter, because, for example, and this was something that somebody else brought up, you have the gun issue, right? You have this gun issue. You have these kids now who are protesting. But freedom of speech is not as important as apparently Amendment 2. You know, like, we have this, like, really fucking warped perception of what's important and where our priorities should lie. Like, I got into, I've removed easily in, we're now a week from, and I've probably removed close to 30 people from my Facebook feed, which I had already cleared out people during last year's elections. I have many friends on my Facebook page who have opposing opinions. It has nothing to do with opposing opinions. Bear Cub. Bear Cub and I see, while we're the same in a lot of things, we are on complete, for the most part, different political standpoints. He's a Second Amendment fucking enthusiast. I don't really give a shit. I'm not anti-gun, but I'm not also in the world of nothing's gonna happen. When he was just like, oh, that wasn't gonna change anything, and I was just like, when he made that comment, and I was like, well, I want you to tell that to the kids who are really pleading for gun control. I didn't even say anything else to him. Mm-hmm. And he had nothing to say back to me, because he didn't respond to me, which
he
means that, check me.
Yeah.
So, when he doesn't respond, check me. That means you wouldn't say that to one of your kids. If your daughter had gone up to you and told you I was really pleading, would you look at her and tell her, well, an AR-15 wasn't what killed 15 people in another location? You wouldn't have said that. So, I have, like, just a lot of things. I have a thing with the assault rifles and the semi-automatic weapons. You're talking about, you're saying that this gun is to defend yourself. But when you go to an army base where there are soldiers who are defending not only our country, but all the other soldiers in the base, they're not carrying AR-15s at the gate. They're carrying pistols. That's what they're carrying. So if the army doesn't think that it's important to have an AR-15 on their guards guarding, you know, other soldiers and tanks and missiles and people.
And, yeah, multiple enemies coming at you.
You know, I'm sorry. And that's just the thing. And then one of the articles that I read from an ex-military guy, he even said, he goes, I love the argument of we need this caliber of a weapon to be able to defend ourselves against the government, which is why the Second Amendment was written in the first place. But the guy was like, are you stupid? You think your single AR-15 is going to stop you from the government, which they can just, I don't know,
nuke you?
Bomb you, throw a grenade in your house, and what fucking good is your AR-15 then? Like, come on, you are not going to win a war against the government with your AR-15. Even, you have soldiers who are saying this gun was meant to kill, not to hunt, not to do this.
Well,
you only have
assault rifle. What are you assaulting?
Yeah, but an animal. The paper that you decided to shoot at the gun range. Like, again, I have shotguns, okay? I have police officers in my family. I have ex-military in my family.
I think a person should know how to shoot.
I think they should know how to use a gun,
understand
with the exception
it.
Of my wife.
That case in point.
With the exception of my wife.
Well, I wrote in my notes, I said, do I believe that the Second Amendment is valid? Yeah, it's fine. We have the right to defend ourselves. Fine, whatever. Would I get a gun? Would I trust myself? Hell no. Not on days where I feel overwhelmed and I feel like, because I might not go and blast somebody else, I'll just shoot myself.
But that is another topic I wanted to talk about. I posted a video on Facebook, and it was a Now This video, which was really well constructed.
This does really good videos.
And it wasn't just discussing mass shootings. And basically, the end of the video is like, we don't have a gun problem, we have several.
On October 1st, 2015, a gunman at a college in Oregon shot 18 people, killing 9. The mass shooting followed an ongoing pattern seen throughout the United States. In fact, the U.S. sees a considerably larger number of these shootings than any other industrialized country. So we wanted to know, why exactly does the United States have so many mass shootings? Well, it's important to note that there is no easily agreed upon definition for what constitutes a mass shooting. According to media sources, there have only been about 72 mass shootings in the last 30 years. Meanwhile, a cited list of mass shooting incidents lists 337 in 2014 alone. Why the distinction? Well, the first refers fairly specifically to indiscriminate murder sprees in public places, like the massacres in Oregon, Sandy Hook, and Aurora. But the FBI defines a mass murder as any four or more murders occurring in a single incident. This skyrockets the number of cases and includes gang disputes, domestic altercations, and armed robbery. Obviously, there's a concrete difference between a person who shoots up a school and gang violence. The causes and solutions to both are very distinct and often the source of much misunderstanding. When addressing the total number of mass shootings, there is a clear and defined correlation between the number of guns and rates of shootings. A Harvard study found that wherever there are more guns, there is more homicide, even after accounting for rates of assault, robbery, unemployment, poverty, and alcohol consumption. This follows the fact that in states where it's easier to purchase guns, there are naturally more guns and naturally higher homicide rates. Recent reports have attempted to make it clear that mental illness is not a major contributing factor to most mass murders, and that gun control is the real solution. But when addressing the less common and more frequently discussed public massacres, there are certain specific patterns that emerge. A majority of the attackers have been white men showing signs of mental instability who had acquired their guns legally. And this is relatively unsurprising. Gun background checks are limited in their ability to check private mental health records. And mental health care in the United States overall is lacking. In 2012, it was reported that roughly 90 million Americans lived in an area without adequate access to mental health care, which is also expensive and massively stigmatized within American culture. The fact is that there are many different types of mass shootings, with a combination of contributing factors. When lawmakers and media personalities discuss various solutions, especially involving gun control and mental health care, they're often speaking in different contexts. Yes, overall mass murders will go down with stricter gun control laws. However, better mental health care would likely reduce the number of public massacres. America's real mass murder problem is when those deaths are politicized and solutions are ignored along partisan lines. Some people claim that stricter gun control laws are the only solution to ending mass shootings. But just how easy is it to get a gun in the United States anyway?
A kid in Boca, again in Florida, took a gun to school, except he shot himself in the bathroom, okay? The highest rate of suicide, like the highest type of suicide deaths is by guns.
That's it,
because
it's
easy.
Happens or does, yeah.
It's easy. Mm-hmm. It's fast. It works. You know, you might try to hang yourself and it doesn't work. You might try to cut yourself.
Yeah, it's not quantified. It's not like you got to take this many pills.
Right.
No, and that's
it's immediate. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, when the majority of people are in that mental state, it's temporary, but they have a permanent fix in their hand. So the emotion may be temporary or something that can be worked on. I'm not saying like you don't, people who are depressed feel suicidal often. I get that. But that peak of I'm going to do it right now is a rush. It's you deciding in an instant. And if you have a gun, that decision needs no thought. No more further thought process, no further discussion or idea. You pull the gun, you put it to your head, and it's done.
Because the overwhelm is greater than, I sit this out. It's too much. Look what people do sometimes when they drive their car into a wall. It's because it's so much more at that moment. But that's one of the biggest problems is we need to address the at that moment. And it's not the gun at that moment.
No.
It's being able to say there's this gun in front of me. I'm not going to use it in a destructive way.
The way I see it is there's a lot to be discussed.
Mm-hmm.
And what is angering me right now is the idea or the concept that now is not the time. Well, you know what? It's been a year and then some since Pulse, right? Because Pulse was the year before last.
Almost 6 years since Sandy Hook.
It's never been the right time. And you have politicians and government officials saying it's not the time. but the families of the victims are saying it's time. So don't tell me that it's not the time to talk about it, because right now we need to be focused on the families. They're asking for it. It's just, if the families are asking for that talk, don't use that as an excuse why this is not the time.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You have Rick Scott, who basically said, now is the time to send prayers and thoughts and prayers.
I love that the kids said, fuck you.
Yeah. I love everything that the kids are doing right now. And that is, for me, what is the only positive of all of this is the uprising of the kids. And
the
I
only
hope,
silver lining, yeah.
I hope that they don't lose steam, because we have a lot of time from now to the next elections this year. And are really important.
Yeah.
This flips the House, this flips the Senate, this flips Congress in our favor. You know, like, I couldn't imagine what it must feel like to be, A, one of those kids who was hiding and fearing for your life, losing friends, losing teachers, going all the way to Tallahassee, and to find out that they don't want to listen to your band, but they want to go ahead and determine that porn is a public health risk. They don't want to talk about your guns in your face after 17 people died.
And they didn't
but
tell
sure,
him he was
let's talk about how Billy Bob keeps whacking off and his wife
the car
is really
caught
pissed off
fire.
And it's a health
It didn't blow up. And
like,
I talked to him after he lost a lot of his skins, his hands, his feet. I have 10 nieces and nephews. We're talking about bump stocks. We're talking about legislation. A child of God is dead. Cannot we acknowledge in this country that we cannot accept this. I can't do it, Wolf. I'm sorry. We can't do it.
Yeah. Oops.
I'm so mad for them. And I think back of, like, me in high school and what I was afraid of. Like, what I was truly, truly afraid of in high school. And it was all bullshit. It was whether or not my best friend is talking to me that day, whether or not I'm going to have a date for homecoming, whether or not my mom's going to catch that I skipped school.
Or your dad's going to cut your hair.
Or, well, yeah, that was freshman year, and that was my own doing. You know, like, what...
things like that, yeah.
It was stupid shit. Whether or not my boyfriend was going to be mad at me, or whether or not I wanted to keep dating him. And I can't
or this
even...
this group is going
to
accept me.
Yeah, and I can't even say that it was, like, a anxious fear. It's just typical teenage bullshit.
But you see that now.
Yeah. Back at the then, time I was scared of my friends being mad at me. I would even say that more than anything else. I would say I was afraid more socially than my parental units.
But going back to what you were saying about the whole kids going through puberty and all that, imagine how much amplified it is. How much more amplified it is, and it's a shooting.
Yeah. And
every time they hear something pop.
Anything. It would be in the cafeteria if somebody has a bag of chips and they like smack it like that and it makes that popping noise. Everybody just kind of gets really quiet.
Going to Spanish.
Comment down below your favorite number.
At OG.
Oh my gosh.
Hey. Like and subscribe.
Comment your favorite food.
Pasta.
Just kidding.
Mine's human.
I want broccoli.
Humans.
Life is cool. Oh, you did not brush your hair.
Are you in our class?
When they eventually have to walk back into that school.
The last 20 minutes of class, there was a fire drill, but it was really weird right away because we had just had one this morning. So everyone already knew that someone had either pulled it or that it was set off. And it couldn't have been ringing for more than 5 minutes. No, like more than 2 minutes, because by the time I had reached the stairwell, it had already stopped. And everyone's kind of stood there not knowing exactly what to do. And we just kind of looked around until we heard 3 or 4 just loud bangs. And everyone who was going down the stairs just ran back up. And about, I want to say over 100 students just trying to run into a classroom and shut the door. There was kids in my class just like running to the corners, like jumping over desks, trying to get behind the teacher's desk, and like it was a mess.
Was the teacher in the room?
My teacher actually wasn't there today. We had a sub, and you could tell he didn't really know what to do.
Yeah.
At first we thought it was some kind of messed up drill going on, but then we started to smell stuff like smoke and gunpowder. and our parents were calling us, and kids started like freaking out and calling everyone, but then other kids were shushing them to be quiet. And like, it seemed like we were there for hours, but just not knowing anything of what was going on and only hearing the sirens outside.
Did you lock the door?
The door was already locked. I tried not to look, but there was blood and gunpowder and bodies just all over the place. Like, we were stepping over puddles of blood and just trying not to look.
They eventually have to walk back into that school.
This was like the worst first day of school you could ever imagine. I was physically ill on the way to school because people were standing out on the roads, you know, with signs and cheering. It felt like a circus to me. It didn't feel like our school, and it just felt just wrong. Every bit of it felt wrong.
I've been teaching for 14 years.
15 years.
This is my third year at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School.
I do feel like I've been there my whole life. We're a family. First day we went back was a Friday, and it was just for the teachers to come back to have breakfast. And the day before, we all started emailing and calling and texting our principal, Ty Thompson, who's amazing. And we were like, we're not ready. Please don't make us come. We can't do this. We're just not ready. And he said, look, guys, we're a family, and families and tragedies get together. I had to take attendance, and her name is on my roster, and I got to her name on the roster, and you know, I didn't read it, but I couldn't read the rest, and I just cried trying to read every single name on that roster. And after that, and I didn't want to do that to my kids. You know, I didn't want to be weak for them. I wanted to be strong for them, but I couldn't, because nobody, no parent, no teacher, nobody should have to deal with that. This beautiful girl. I mean, these children, they were beautiful. They had their whole lives ahead of them. And it's heartbreaking, you know? And then the next day I was like, well, how am I gonna do this again? You know, every time I have to do this, I'm gonna think of her, and how are we gonna do this, and the kids, and...
So we don't wanna talk about gun control. We don't wanna talk about banning specific weapons. We don't want to talk about it at all. We want to pretend like if our prayers are shielding our children. But somebody started a petition and went to the city commission to knock down the school. The school isn't the problem. Now, is that building tragic because of what just happened? Sure, but your efforts are going into the wrong area. You want to knock down a complete school, move these kids into different schools because you now want to knock down the school where all of this happened.
So we're going to teach also our kids not to, to say, you know what, you don't feel good about this, don't ever face it.
Yeah, and that's...
run away.
A problem, you know, like there's so many problems. There's so many situations.
Yeah, there's PTSD.
I do want to talk on the episode, which I normally don't do when something like this happens, which I didn't after Pulse. And I didn't after Sandy Hook, and I didn't after Columbine, but for this one, that kid went through a lot of shit.
Oh, his mother dying, the
His parents died, and then his adoptive parents died, okay? I'm not excusing what he did in the least bit.
Ever.
But what I am interested in, or concerned with, is... you have this kid whose parents died, whose adoptive parents died, who had been expelled from school for bringing in a weapon, who wasn't even allowed to bring a backpack into school because he was a danger, expelled from two different schools. At some point, a guidance counselor, the city, Department of Children and Families, somebody should have been like, hey, this is a problem. Let's not even get into the fact that the FBI ignored all phone calls and all the other shit
that went through there.
Or the fact that he set himself on a YouTube that he was going to be the next...
He was crying for help. He was saying, no...
I am going to shoot up a school. He said, I'm going to be the next professional school shooter. or something to that effect.
I'm going
to
become a professional school shooter on this guy's...
On somebody's video, YouTube video. On his own Instagram, he videotaped himself cutting himself. So...
New evidence suggests that there were warning signs about Nicholas Cruz, and they were overlooked or maybe they were ignored. His Instagram page shows photos of weapons, including one of him with guns and knives. A law enforcement source tells CBS News the local sheriff's office was told 2 years ago that an Instagram post using Cruz's name said he was going to shoot his school. The sheriff tells our Miami station, that's WFOR, he was unaware of that. Jerrica Duncan is at Cruz's home in Parkland, where the FBI continues to search for clues there. Jerrica, good morning.
Good morning. Cruz moved into this home behind me with a friend back in November after his mother died. Now, he did live at a home nearby, and police were reportedly called there 39 times beginning in 2010 because of Cruz for calls ranging from domestic disturbance to abuse. They were signs that people knew he had troubling behavior.
And the kids are really angry, and they're scared, and they're more hurting than I think they're letting on because they're kids. And then I asked them to raise their hands and said, you know, how many of us are not sleeping well? So are you guys sleeping well?
No.
No. And every hand went up, and I said, look around. You're not alone. Like, no one is sleeping well. I think as resilient as strong as they're portraying themselves to be, and even though you may see them smile or laugh at an interview, none of them are okay. And then as a staff at lunch, you know, we're not okay either. We're not okay. We're doing the best we can.
My sister had texted me and said it was Nicholas Cruz, and I said, oh my God, I know him.
Sarah Lowy says she knew Nicholas Cruz from his job at the Dollar Tree store.
He had this weird disposition about himself. He followed me on Instagram, and I saw all of the pictures of his guns. He had a picture of his gun up to his face.
Lowy says she regrets not doing more.
As soon as I heard what happened, immediately my mind was, I should have done something. I could have prevented this.
People who knew Cruz say he spoke about his guns and hurting animals. I mean, Shelby Spino lived two doors down from Cruz.
But I saw him with the gun aiming at their chickens.
President Trump tweeted on Thursday, neighbors and classmates knew he was a big problem. Must always report such instances to authorities again and again.
I'll probably never forget that name.
Ben Benight, a Mississippi bail bondsman, says he contacted the FBI in September when he noticed a comment on one of his YouTube videos that troubled him. It said, I'm going to be a professional school shooter, posted under the username Nicholas Cruz. The FBI visited Benight the next day.
Anybody that makes a public statement like that definitely needs to be investigated.
But on Thursday, the FBI said the post was a dead end because it lacked specific information about the time, location, and identity of the person who posted it.
No additional information was found to positively identify the person who posted this comment.
The president who decided to victim blame and family blame and friend blame about how people should have spoken up. They did speak up. Yeah. Your own government didn't pay attention.
Well, the girl said it to her when she was making her speech. Nobody listened.
Yeah.
And we spoke up.
Yeah, no, she said it. She's like, oh, you want to know why I didn't talk to him? You didn't have to be next to him. And so I get the kids, but as adults, as teachers, so now you want to arm teachers, but you don't give teachers enough time to be one-on-one with their students that they could have given him.
No, give him a gun.
Yeah, let's give him a gun. So that...
You know what? Better yet, take down the building, give him a gun, move buildings, let's make
like,
all
it's
this...
Like, it's just, it's so much. This is where we are right now as a society, as a culture, as American citizens, this is where we were at some point. At some point, we did have a ban on assault rifles. We did have gun bans and controls. Let's talk about the civil rights movement and how quickly you made it not okay to... We, at that point, when I was watching the live feed, only knew, I think, about 12 deaths. Like, the numbers hadn't risen just yet.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know his background. We didn't know anything. You had
no name.
Numerous people. And I mean numerous. There wasn't just one logo person. Like, I saw back-to-back, like, 50 comments, and this is all rapid-fire. We should start arresting parents for having bad seats.
Oh, yes. I saw some of those comments. Another one was, who are these angry gingers that keep killing people?
Yeah, like...
It's like, okay, so now we're going to head into... Like,
oh, no, now redheaded.
Where it's,
no, redheaded, freckled... Vanessa's should be condemned right now.
Nothing.
You know, but I'm like, okay, you don't even know, where these kids' parents... Like, oh, where are the parents? Because that's another thing. They were in school, so their parents were probably, working because
yeah.
we have such a bad economy that we don't live in the times anymore where
they
only one parent has to work.
Three jobs.
Yeah, you have both parents who are working full-time jobs, sometimes more than one, so they were probably, fucking working. And then once you find out, both sets of his parents died. So that's where his parents were. This kid is disturbed.
He was taken in by who? Who was the wolf?
Then I got mad at how they were blaming that family. Look. You had a family who had no blood relation to this kid,
yeah.
who saw a kid struggling, who saw a kid who had gone through shit, and welcomed him into their home. Now, you also say, the same people, here's where I have a problem. You have people saying they should have never let him into their home with a gun. Okay? But you're the same people that are telling me we shouldn't have a gun ban. And that everybody has a Second Amendment right. So you are telling me that we're allowed
to ban him.
Right, we can only ban him because now we know he's crazy.
Hindsight.
Because now we know that he did this fucked up shit. But at the time, they didn't know.
No.
I'm sure if they knew, they made him lock it up. They made him get a safe. They made him get all of this. They told him that those were the rules. But we have a Second Amendment right that allows him to carry a gun. To get a weapon, to do this, to do that. Now you want to use that same rule and go, no. But they should have never let, this is somewhat their fault. Because they should have never let him get a gun. No, bitch, we should have never let him buy a gun. Because it took him 10 minutes to get
that
gun.
Why is it legal for an 18-year-old to buy any kind of weapon, yet be 21?
Long rifles.
Well, they sell them to Walmart.
Yeah. Listen, there was another video. I mean, everything's been going crazy. But there was another thing online where I saw, and it's a 15-year-old kid, 15, 16-year-old kid, trying to buy a lottery ticket. He can't.
Nope.
Tries to buy cigarettes. He can't. Tries to buy beer. He can't. Goes into a porn shop to buy porn, which is a health risk, by the way. He can't. He walks into a gun show and walks out with an AR-15.
When the porn, I'm sorry to say it like that, the porn could have helped him with whatever frustrations he had. No, let's give him a gun.
So, you know, and this is when I posted online, you were like, are you being sarcastic or not? That I was just like, well, you know, scratch-offs are really dangerous. You know, one scratch-off and it's the gateway drug to the lottery. Like, how are we okay with that?
Because it's, like you said, the culture, this culture, and now the head of the monster is somebody who, if you threaten to cut off his penis, he's going to be like, no, you're not cutting off my dick, and my dick is the gun.
And then it becomes, guns don't kill people, people kill people. That argument alone always drives me insane, and for multiple reasons. And somebody always likes to bring up cars.
I hear so.
Okay. Cars don't kill people. The people behind the wheel kill people.
The car does damage.
First of all, let's start off with the fact that when our vehicular manslaughters and deaths went up, the government stepped in and started to look at how we were building these vehicles. Because sometimes people were dying on something that wasn't a complete and stupid, like it wasn't just a drunk driver. It was also because of the way the seatbelts were built into the vehicle, how high the steering wheel was, that it was too high that it was crushing chests, how our wheels were being built, how our axles were being built, that the car wasn't going to also break down while you were driving. Like, there were steps that were taken, precautionary. Yes, is the person who's driving the vehicle still responsible? Yes. But so is the thing that they're driving, because they're the ones that are turning it into a weapon.
It's taking preventative measures of not letting it have been as bad as it was.
Right. And guess what? It's illegal to drive a Formula One vehicle on the road. Because we know that a vehicle that goes 150 plus on the road...
A little hard to control.
Kind of dangerous.
Yeah.
We're not blaming the guy who's... Now, so we know a Formula One car, that's bad. Anybody behind that car is dangerous. So is behind an assault rifle. Like, that's the same concept. Like, I want you to imagine that your Yaris is a 9mm and our Formula One is an assault rifle. Like,
if I see both of them coming at me, I'm moving away from the Formula... I will be like, let the Yaris hit me because it's going to do less damage.
Much less damage, you know what I mean? So... That argument is stupid. Somebody today posted, and I had to laugh. It was, when my kid hits another kid with a stick. No, I don't blame the stick, but I still take the stick away from my son.
And show him.
That's not what you do. Right. So that argument, again, is ridiculous to me. Again, I just hate that it's so black and white with people constantly. Oh.
Cuando le conviene.
Yeah, of
when
course.
When it's convenient.
Of course.
Because, dude.
But that's where we are at right now. Yeah. And it's driving me absolutely crazy. And everything that I feared January 2017, it is... literally slowly fucking happening, and it is this great divide within our culture, within our races, within our genders right now, within our morals. And that I didn't understand. Like, I knew that certain things were going to change and certain splits were going to happen, but when we get to a point that as a society we have our morals split, just morals, and it's sad to say this, but we all should have known. And I hate to say this, but I want to see change. And the only reason that right now I feel a little bit different than what I was about to say is only because of how these kids that went to these schools, these high school students, these 18-year-olds, these kids who are about to vote for the first fucking time are taking it. And they're running with it. And they're doing the right thing. I don't give a shit. If I had kids right now in high school and they wanted to walk out, I'd make their posters. So... I like that this revolution seems very similar to the bra burning era. I hope that they stay
Vietnam and all.
Yeah, I hope that they stay with that fire underneath them, and I hope that they're so young and rambunctious and angry that everything that's being dished at them, crisis actors and all that other crap, is just fueling their anger, because it's going to be great. But in all honesty, I would be lying if I said that when this happened, I didn't say to myself, nothing's gonna change. And I know that because the minute we let 5, 6, and 7-year-olds die and did nothing after it, nothing's gonna change this.
Yeah, that's the same thing.
And it's sad that even I, in my own morals, and us as a society in our own morals, even divide children. Like, elementary was so much more so much more intense than teenagers in high school. But the truth of the matter is that it is different. And when you had first graders and second graders die and nobody did a fucking thing afterwards, and you had the same conspiracy theorists, there's people who still believe Sandy Hook didn't happen.
When we saw 20 first graders go down, you don't think I looked around and said, this has got to be the end? It's gotta be, it cannot continue after this. The fact that we're still having these meetings and I still have to travel around and talk to locals about how to heal and how to recover and what the best ways are to take care of your people is terrible.
I can't tell you when they found out that I was coming down here to be with you, how many emails I got saying, let them know, we love you. We care about them. We will do whatever we can to help them through this.
You don't just have the people that are in this room. You have Newtown. You have Columbine. You have every other district in this country that had to deal with this horrific, continuously horrific event.
18 years ago, we stood exactly where you guys are now, arm in arm, asking the same questions, disillusioned, sad, broken, hurting, confused. Why? Why us? Why you? Why now? Why again? 18 years ago, it should have never happened again, one day after April 20th, 1999. It should not continue to happen. You should not be sitting here with tears rolling down your faces, saying goodbye to 17 beautiful souls. There is no, I wish I could stand up here and say, here's the 12-step plan of how you will get through this. Here is step by step how you're going to walk through this, but that doesn't exist. But one thing I do know is that you will get through because of the people that are sitting here in this room, because you have each other.
In the shadow of this symbol for power, these shoes are a symbol of something totally different. Row by row, they're a call for help.
She always had a kind of unique sense of fashion. She really didn't follow fashion trends.
Just ask Barbara and Andy Parker. They're the parents of Allison Parker, the reporter who was gunned down on live TV. She was just 24.
And you remember her smile and just, I mean, it could light up a room.
And now her turquoise cowboy boots sit among thousands, a reminder that these shootings have real victims. Victims like Lori's daughter, Emily.
I remember getting the phone call from Emily the morning of April 16th, and she said, "Hi, Mommy, I've been shot."
Fortunately, that phone call would not be their last. You see, Lori was one of the lucky ones. Her daughter, a student at Virginia Tech, survived.
This morning, we know the names. We see the little faces of those sweet little boys and girls, and the teachers who love them, and the parents who so desperately miss them.
12 little girls and 8 little boys, all only in first grade, and the teachers who tried to save them. On Saturday, photos and details of lives cut short started to emerge.
The worst that I know of any of my colleagues having seen.
Noah Ponzer had just turned 6. His twin sister survived the shooting, but Noah did not. 7-year-old Grace McDonald, family members telling ABC News, "Our daughter Grace was the love and light of our family. Words cannot adequately express our sense of loss." Anna Marquez Green, the daughter of a jazz musician. Her father says they're struggling to work through this nightmare. Catherine Hubbard's family said in a statement Saturday, "We ask that you continue to pray for us and the other families who have experienced loss in this tragedy." Jesse Lewis was looking forward to making gingerbread houses in school that day. He was in Victoria Soto's class. She, just 27 years old. Her family says she was shielding some of her first graders when she died. Lauren Rousseau had just started as a full-time teacher in September. She was having the best year of her life, her mother said. Mary Sherlach, the school psychologist. In a statement Saturday, her family said that Mary felt like she was doing God's work by helping children. She headed towards the shooter when the assault began. Joined by the school's beloved principal, Dawn Hochsprung, a mother herself, it is now believed she turned on the PA system when the shooting started so others could be warned of the danger that had invaded their school.
6 minutes and about 20 seconds. In a little over 6 minutes, 17 of our friends were taken from us, 15 were injured, and everyone, absolutely everyone, in the Douglas community was forever altered. Everyone who was there understands. Everyone who has been touched by the cold grip of gun violence understands. For us, long, tearful, chaotic hours in the scorching afternoon sun were spent not knowing. No one understood the extent of what had happened. No one could believe that there were bodies in that building waiting to be identified for over a day. No one knew that the people who were missing had stopped breathing long before any of us had even known that a code red had been called. No one could comprehend the devastating aftermath or how far this would reach or where this would go. For those who still can't comprehend because they refuse to, I'll tell you where it went. Right into the ground, 6 feet deep. 6 minutes and 20 seconds with an AR-15, and my friend Carmen would never complain to me about piano practice. Aaron Feist would never call Kira Miss Sunshine. Alex Schachter would never walk into school with his brother Ryan. Scott Beagle would never joke around with Cameron at camp. Helena Ramsey would never hang out after school with Max. Gina Montalto would never wave to her friend Liam at lunch. Joaquin Oliver would never play basketball with Sam or Dylan. Elena Petty would never. Kara Lugren would never. Chris Hickson would never. Luke Hoyer would never. Marquin Duque Aguiano would never. Peter Wang would never. Alyssa Alhadaf would never. Jamie Guttenberg would never. Meadow Pollock would never.
There are more than a list of names. There are people who loved and were loved. There are people who have families and friends and dreams. And the truth is, we don't know much about some of them. We want you to hear their names and a little bit about who they were. Edward Sotomayor Jr. He worked at a travel agency that catered to the gay community. His family says he was witty, charming, and that he always left things better than he found them. He was 34 years old. Stanley Almodovar III. He was a pharmacy technician. He was the last video that we saw of him. It was posted on social media. It showed him laughing and singing on the way to that nightclub. He was just 23. Luis Omar Ocasio-Cabo. He was a dancer and a barista. He was just 20 years old. Luis Vielma. He worked at the Harry Potter ride at Universal Orlando. He was just 22. Juan Ramon Guerrero. His cousin said Juan came out to his family just this year and was afraid they might not accept him, but they did, and they embraced his boyfriend as well. He was 22. Christopher Andrew Leonone, known as Drew. He was Juan's boyfriend, and his mom says he established the Gay Straight Alliance at his high school. He was 32 years old. Eric Yvonne Ortiz Rivera. A friend says he was always willing to help everybody and sacrificed a lot for his family. He was 36. Peter O. Gonzalez Cruz. He worked at a UPS store, memorized apparently all the regular customers' names. He could make anyone smile, his friend said. He was just 22. Kimberly K.J. Morris moved from Hawaii to Florida just a few months ago to help her mother and her grandmother. She was a bouncer at Pulse Nightclub. She was 37. Eddie Justice was an accountant who texted his mother from the club, texted his mother saying, "Mommy, I love you." He was 30. Enrique Rios, a friend says he was cool and a funny dude who could tell people don't let the world hold you back from your dreams. He was 25. Anthony Luis Laureano Dizla, a talented dancer born in Puerto Rico. He was 25. Jonathan Antonio Camuy Vega. He worked for Telemundo, first in Puerto Rico and then in Orlando. He was just about to turn 25. Corey James Connell is a student at Valencia Community College and hoped to become a firefighter. He was 21. Mercedes Marisol Flores, her father says she was a happy girl who had so many dreams. She was 26. Dianca Deirdre Drayden, her family called her Didi. She was a bartender at Pulse. She was just 32. Miguel Angel Honorato managed a Mexican restaurant. A colleague says he was an excellent boss and a good friend. He was 30. Jason Benjamin Josephat, a student at Southern Technical College, where a faculty member calls him a sweet kid with a bright future. He was 19. Daryl Roman Burt II was a financial aid officer at Kaiser University, was passionate about volunteer work. He was 29. Jean Carlos Mendez Perez was a perfume salesman. Apparently hit the gym almost every day, and his friend said he was always happy. He was 35. Perez's longtime partner, Luis Daniel Wilson Leon, grew up in a small town in Puerto Rico and was a shoe store manager. He was 37. They died together. Frankie Jimmy De Jesus Velasquez, a professional dancer specializing in a traditional folk dance of his native Puerto Rico. He was 50. Amanda Alvear, she was a nursing student at the University of South Florida, was 25. Martin Benitez Torres. He was a college student in Puerto Rico, visiting family in Orlando. He was 33. Juan Chavez Martinez. His co-workers at a hotel say he was a kind, a loving person. He was just 25. Gerald Arthur Wright worked at Disney World. The co-worker says he was wonderful with the guests. He was always smiling. He was 31. Leroy Valentin Fernandez worked leasing apartments. A co-worker says he sang Adele in the office until they couldn't take it anymore. He was 25. Tevin Eugene Crosby, dedicated, hardworking business owner from Michigan. He was just 25. Brenda Lee Marquez McCool. She had 11 kids, beat cancer twice, and often went dancing at Pulse with her gay son. She supported him that much. She was 49. Her son survived the shooting. Angel L. Candelario Padro recently moved to Orlando. He was new here. He had just started a new job as a technician at the Florida Retina Institute. He was 28. Gilberto Ramon Silva Menendez was studying healthcare management. His family says that he was the light and life of all family gatherings. He was 25. Javier Jorge Reyes was a salesman at Gucci. Friends say he was always positive. He was humble, a lovely friend. He was 40. Shane Evan Tomlinson was a gifted singer who performed at weddings and clubs, was 33. Simone Adrian Carrillo Fernandez worked at McDonald's where he brought in birthday cakes for his coworkers and had just gotten back from a trip to Niagara Falls with his partner. He was 31. Oscar Aracena Montero was a Simon's partner. He was 26. They also died together. Rodolfa Ayala worked at a blood donation center, was a Puerto Rican native, loved to dance. He was 33 years old. Frank Hernandez, he worked at a Calvin Klein store, was a great brother and had no gender tattooed on his arm. He was 27. Xavier Emmanuel Serrano Rosado was a dancer, described as hardworking and friendly, proud of his son. He was 33. Akira Monet Murray, she recently graduated from high school, was planning to go to Mercyhurst University and play basketball. She was just 18. And Christopher Joseph Sanfeliz worked at a bank, was said to be the most positive guy around, was just 24 years old. Luis Daniel Conde was a makeup artist, co-owned a salon with his partner. He was 39. Juan P. Rivera Velasquez, he was the partner to Luis. He was 37. Antonio Devon Brown was a captain in the, the U.S. Army Reserve and a graduate of Florida A&M. He was 29. Alejandro Barrios Martinez was 21. Joel Rayon Paniagua was 32. Jean Nieves Rodriguez was 27. We don't know what the truth is. Gilmarie Rodriguez Sullivan was 24. And Paul Terrell Henry.
Try hard to concentrate. Hold out your hand. Can you feel?
Keeping the gears in line. Don't be
keep it safe.